Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right then.
Morning.
Morning.
Are you ready now? After keeping us waiting for 20 minutes.
I didn't keep you waiting.
I don't know why you have, what your thing is about keeping everyone waiting. It's like, do you know that you're doing it when you keep everyone waiting?
This time I was slightly aware of it, and I heard you chuntering away to Neil about,
you know. But it's always something, isn't it? It's always a reason to keep us waiting. Not just me and Neil, but like me and the kids as well. It's fine, we're used to it now, but I want you to like think about it next time we're leaving the house.
No, leaving the house is because I'm the one who has to make sure the doors are locked, that the cats have been properly left with some food. You're the one who just goes out, are you taps running, things on, fridges open, food. I bet if I turn around, okay, not today, but normally bread left out on the counter. Anyway.
It is true. It's true. I leave everything open and taps running and lights on.
Yesterday, when I shot out of the house with Sam to get taken to school and you were left alone at home all day, no cleaner or anything, you didn't open either of the cat flaps because you don't do the little things that keep the house running.
Don't.
So the cat shat everywhere and made it a...
No, she didn't.
But she could have done.
All right, you hard-working man.
Right, well, you start then. You get us going. You notice I haven't mentioned the podcast. I haven't said, have you read the paper? Do you get anything? I'm going to let you run it. Proper, back to the basics of this podcast.
All right, let's see.
Giles has been out on the school run. He comes home. Esther, meanwhile, has filtered the newspapers to tell him what he's going to write about. So, tell me.
Mentioned just now about seagulls. What's a seagull's favourite food? Yours. Scientists have shed light on what drives pilfering seagulls to swoop on tourists' chips. When they see a human eating, they think, I'll have what she's having. Very nice, Reese Blakely, well done. An experiment was devised in which a person sat on a Brighton beach at high tide when herring gulls are less likely to forage from natural sources. Seagulls are kleptoparasites, which means they steal food from other animals. And also fish, like go fishing for.
What have they, what have they discovered that we didn't know? They steal your
seagulls? Well, nothing. It's not that what they've discovered that we didn't know. It's that they have confirmed what we've always suspected, which is that they want our food more than they want to find their own.
Fair enough.
The column being, yeah, duh, other people's stuff is always better than your own. No?
Thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's wife, sort of thing.
But you will anyway. Why do they have to say
don't
that?
Don't worry, mate. I'm only shagging your wife because I'm part seagull.
It goes with that poem that you love about comparing the inside of your life with the outside of someone else's.
Not a poem. That's just a thing that Julian Barnes said.
Fine.
No,
it's the Shakespeare sonnet about how you're desperate to have one man's wit and the other man's football boots or whatever it was.
My deeply cultured wife.
Yeah.
When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state and trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries and look upon myself and curse my state, wishing me like to one. And you're quite right. And this is Shakespeare, the greatest writer ever, just talking about wishing me like to one more rich in hope, featured like him with friends possessed, desiring this man's art and that man's scope with what I most enjoy contented least. You're quite right. So that is when Shakespeare is talking about he's feeling miserable because he's desiring this man's art and that man's scope. Shakespeare sat there thinking, I wish I was as good at writing as him. I wish I knew as much as him. And of course, how bonkers, because he is the very epitome, the epitome.
That's why
of knowing everything
and
being able to write.
And sometimes you can feel really, really overwhelmed by other people's individual.
So you're saying he wasn't an upstart crow; he was an upstart seagull. Is that your point? That was a fucking good joke I just made right
there.
That
was very good, very funny. One second, I'm just going to close the door.
So what's the seagull point then?
I've made it perfectly clear what my seagull point is. My seagull point is that you say, obviously, seagulls want your chips. Everybody else's chips, everybody else's newspaper, everybody else's life always looks better than yours. And toddlers are actually programmed to imitate other people in order to learn. And actually, even if they are standing next to another toddler who is holding an identical red crayon, the toddler will snatch that crayon off the other toddler because it perceives it to be better because someone else has got it.
Okay, so what... So if I, in terms of this sort of like...
It doesn't look like it's captured your imagination.
Well, what is it? What am I telling the readers? Like, yes, we're a bit like seagull. Yeah, research... So like, according to research in Sussex University, what a crap university, why don't they do something proper with their lives? That's the first paragraph. No, I know, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's not. Imagine if you go to Sussex University and go to Brighton, walking down the beach, having a lovely time, going to the pub.
Or seagulls.
Yeah, seagulls, amazing.
Yeah.
So nice.
Yeah, it would be nice to go to Sussex, yeah.
So off they went, sitting on the throwing chips, doing their research, and they discover that seagulls like other people's food.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, this is a bit like people, I would go. I mean, it's like, what am I going to... It's like, let's...
Can you do it better than that?
Let's try and be a bit less like seagulls. What's the lesson, you know?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Because, I can extrapolate from... Like, it's an intro to a restaurant column. It's just... That's a... It's a... Bleh. It's
no,
a,
okay. It's oh, like right. It doesn't yeah, really... Right. No, say what you really think.
Go on then, what else have you got?
No, don't be mean. You do one.
Did you see that you get the best time to have sex is 7:30 in the morning?
Uh-huh. As long as you haven't got children to get ready for school, then it's fine.
I'm looking forward to seeing what your excuse is going to be after they've gone. So, what I liked about it was that it said the best time to have sex is 7:30 in the morning.
Because that's when your energy levels are at the highest, it says.
Only time I get them right. They just asked a load of old blokes who wake up with a stiffy and can't manage it for the rest of the day. Wake up to better sex. Set the alarm for 7:30. First of all, set the alarm for 7:30. Who's still asleep at 7:30? Teenagers who can have it any time and
people
probably
with
do.
No children.
But yes, who are having sex all the time anyway.
Anyway,
my dream scenario of what they really do. First of all, it was sponsored by a CBD oil company. So it's like, just like people who like hash.
Yeah,
right? Just get really stoned as shag. Mm. But it was the great thing, the funny thing was, and it was mainly couples in long-term relationships between 18 and 65. Two-thirds says sex in the morning was better. 7:30 was the best time. But it went on to say that the best time to have breakfast was found to be around 7:45 a.m. Right? Just after your shag, big sort of, you know. While the most efficient time to complete complex tasks was 10 a.m. Okay, so I mean, I see. So yes, wake up in the morning, have a shag, have some breakfast, then get down to work. I can live with that. And then it said the ideal time to drink alcohol was said to be 6 p.m. I go, right, they've literally planned out. That's my day, apart from the sex. That's like, get up. But wouldn't it be get up, have a fuck, have some breakfast, get down to some tasks, do some writing, 6 p.m. drink, and then start it all over again.
Marvelous. Can I just say, can you please never ever use the phrase have a fuck ever again? That is absolutely toe-curling.
You banned
horrible.
Me from saying make love within about...
Oh!
Yeah, I know. It's just any word for it makes you revolts you, doesn't it? What is the way of describing what a man and a woman do to each other? I remember reading a book when I was 10 and saying sometimes daddy loves mommy so much that he wants to kiss her on the inside. And I thought that was going to be like French kissing where he put his tongue inside her mouth, and it was even worse. And there was there was an actual book, and I took it to school and it was confiscated.
Oh my God, really?
Charles, can we... Corin, can we see your book about kissing mummy on the inside? So as a column, isn't it funny that there are scientists saying you should wake up in the morning, have a shag, then have breakfast, then do some work, then later on have a drink? Wasn't it like the whole day? At 1 o'clock, perhaps a smacker or something, a bit of something on sardines on toast. At 2 o'clock, go for a walk. At 3, watch Neighbours.
Yes. But
the whole day as defined by...
By scientists.
Or is it as shit as the seagull story?
As my seagull story. Yeah, basically it's as shit.
Right, your turn.
Okie dokie. Did you see the men in Germany weeing standing up story?
Sitzspinklers. Habe ich die Sitzspieler story gesehen? Ja, ich habe es gesehen. Persönlich, ich piss nicht. van sitzen.
No.
Ich prefer zu aufstehen, wann ich bin. Yes. Weil ich bin.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes.
Weil ich bin ein Mann. Ich bin okay, kein Frau.
Fine. Okay, fine.
Und Männer pissen, wenn sie aufstehen, stehen auf dem Pisser.
Okay, okay, okay.
Yeah, what did you think about? What do you want to say about?
I wondered if you...
Tell me the story. Have you got the story?
The story is that in Germany, they have confirmed that I think something like most men, we sitting down. As written by Oliver Moody, it says, 7 years ago, the writers Niklas Frank and James Cave published a whimsical guide to Germany's sometimes perplexing social conventions titled German Men Sit Down to Pee. That assertion has now entered the realm of...
They stand up to do everything else, though, like salute Hitler. Sorry.
Fucking hell, leave it alone. Germans are fine.
Too soon.
Germans are fine. That assertion has now entered the realms of empirical fact after an international poll confirmed that the German male is indeed the undisputed champion Sitzspinkler, sitting widdler of the West.
Yeah. So percentages, please.
In the survey, 62% of German men said they usually or always sat to do a wee, compared with 50% of Swedes, 34% of Italians, and only 23% of Britons.
Is that including in urinals?
You can't sit and do a wee.
Well, the Germans, what's the percentage of Germans who sit? Isn't that 67% of them? Do they go into
62.
Some? Do they go into some rank pub, beer keller, you know, urinal, and sort of sit down with their nuts resting on the little lemons flavoured anti-smell
cake
in the bottom of the thing, and then sort of pee. You can't pee sitting down. First of all, Germans have those loos with quite a shallow draft and a very wide bowl so they can turn around and look at their poo, because what they love to do, the Germans, is have a dump and then pick it apart and see how much of their wurst they digested, because they're absolutely obsessed with their guts. But the thing that I've noticed was... Why are you laughing so much? It's not funny. They nearly took over the world. We could all be speaking German. It just, literally, if it hadn't been for Dunkirk.
Wait, hang on a sec.
Yeah?
That's not why they like those wide pans.
Because if they've got their, you think it's just because of their giant kraut asses? There's no...
No, right. It's so that it does, so that it doesn't make a horrid noise.
The Germans don't care if it makes a noise. They just sit down and make a big plop plop. Ah, ich muss scheißen. Plop plop. Hör auf. Ploppenstein. No. There's nothing funnier than the thought of the Bosch having a pwn. Can you make your laugh noisier? Because it's too silent.
I can't, it's too funny.
So look, it's fish in a barrel, this. Or should I say, turds in the toilet. So, Germans, why did you think... No, Germans have those... Germans poo on those... They have those flat pan bogs.
With the very shallow.
And the flush comes out horizontal, not the poo over the edge and down the thing, because they like to poo and have a look. And they all have those. They have those loos where their knees are up around their ears. So that they're very advanced in gut health. The Germans.
Very much so. Yeah.
And they like to poke around their poos and see whether they're the kartoffel salad that I had for breakfast. Pick. The pickle and the pumpernickel, that black bread, whole slices in their poos they have, like a toast rack.
But they don't poke around in their own feces, darling.
They do.
They don't.
They look at it. They bend down and have a look at their poo. Because they also want to know, because that's how you know if you've got bowel cancer, if there's blood in your poo. Whereas if you're English, it falls miles and goes boing and then shoots around the U-bend. And you wouldn't know if you had blood in your stool, right? But if you're German, you do it onto this thing.
But they're eating so much muesli.
And you also have to check the consistency of it. Do you know, I read a thing about the consistency of your poo should be.
Of course, it's called the Düsseldorf scale or something like that.
But the thing that ended teeth brushing for me forever was when they said your poo should be neither hard nor soft, it should have the consistency of toothpaste. And I thought, why did you choose toothpaste for the thing that your poo should be like? And then every time I squeeze toothpaste onto a brush, a little white poo comes onto my...
Anyway,
the flat thing, there is less gap in the bottom. Now, Neil will confirm that the man, unless you've got a very, very small willy, okay?
Yeah.
When I sit on a German toilet, quite often, my nuts just breach the surface of the water. Yeah, you're sitting there, and if depending on my state, you know, very very early in the morning, later in the day, on a warm day, my the tip of that which I have, which women also have, sometimes goes into the water because it's so little gap between the thing that you. So they sit down to wee with their weeny little German penises like hovering above the water, or their giant Teutonic schlongs kind of submerged, and so they wee sitting down. What does it tell us about this? Why do they do it? Apparently they say it empties your bladder better. But I feel if you're sitting down, it's not nearly as lovely.
Generations of German parents worried about their small boys' aim have long encouraged them to sit down. And signs in the lavatories of some bars and cafes also recommend it.
Okay, so that's because they want you to stand up and not piss everywhere. Yes, but... Then,
over the years, several German urologists have argued that sitting is a more natural and comfortable position for urinating because of the structure of the male plumbing system. But that doesn't make sense.
Stand
up to wee, why wouldn't you?
Okay, if you're a boy and you sit down to wee, okay, depending on the elasticity of your penis at any one time, and we're talking about penises because it's a political issue, and we're going to talk about Ed Davey and Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer and penises in a minute. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned. But when you sit down to have a wee, and I remember as a kid, you'd wee straight out and like through the gap and down into your trousers. So I think also sitting down to wee is a bad thing.
Well, when you are teaching when you're toilet training toddlers, they're going to do a poo on the loo, but they also, normally when you do a poo, you have to wee at the same time. We had to basically go through the mechanics of it with Sam. Otherwise, he would just pee straight onto the floor. Yeah, so that's the case. You had to write all of that in your...
I don't know.
About the Germans poking around.
Funnily enough, it's all stuff which is... I'm sure he was going to leave him to in the podcast, but I think it would be considered a bit de trop.
Well, seeing as most people do read your column, particularly your column over breakfast, I think it may be a little cruel. Perhaps.
Okay, forget the zits pinklers. Do you want to talk about penises on women?
Yeah, absolutely. Penises on women is...
So what's the story today? It's Ed Davey.
Well, Ed Davey has weighed in, taking... I think we have now reached peak woman penis. Davey kind of weighing in on this issue. So
where's the Times? Grab it, because I sort of feel that a story like this, rather than us just start, because we're not going to, I don't want to mock the trans debate, I don't want to mock anyone's firmly held beliefs, I don't want to upset anybody. What am I looking for? Ed Davey's penis. Davey, women can clearly have a penis. Sir Ed Davey said that a woman can, quote, quite clearly have a penis, as he aligned himself with Sir Keir Starmer rather than Rishi Sunak on trans issues. The Liberal Democrat leader called for more maturity in a debate. When he shouted out, "Birds can have thongs!" More maturity. Actually, I'm trying to be more mature. I'm going to be very mature about whether a wife can have a trouser snake. Called for more maturity in a debate that has at times split all the main parties. The Lib Dems back the existing law, the Gender Recognition Act, which allows same-sex, blah, 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 blah. The vast majority of people whose biological sex is a woman when they were born, they feel they're women, but there's this very small number that don't feel like that, Davey told LBC.
Clumsily for barging into an issue he knows fucking nothing about.
Asked whether a woman could have a penis, he said, she can have mine. No, he didn't. He said, asked whether a woman could have a penis, he said, well, quite clearly. Now, does that mean could have a penis? Whether a woman could have a penis means can she have one stitched on? Yes. Mm-hmm. Can a person with a penis claim to be a woman? Well, quite clearly. Now, Starmer has said that 99.9% of women, of course, haven't got a penis. It's great, I think, isn't it? Of course, 99.9% of women haven't got penises, said Dr. Keir Starmer of the Genital Liberation Front. And call for an end to a toxic divide over trans issues. Sunak has said that 100% of women do not have a penis. It's like, really, the Liberal Democrats should occupy the middle ground. So really, it's a world where the Tories should say, women don't have penises. Yeah. The Labour Party should say, half of women have penises. And the Lib Dems come in and go, oh, 3/4 of women have penises. Yes. And then you can vote for them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, obviously some women have penises. I mean, yeah. You turned out not to, which was a blessing.
I haven't got one. No.
But you'd like one.
Well, all of the many multiple complicated conversations around the issue of transgender people and gender affirmative care have been so reduced to absolute hilarity with this Ed Davey thing about women, penises, not penises. Some of them, I mean, this has got to be a very low point.
And people like me get kind of, when he says, well, of course, many women have penises. It's like, wait a minute, are you talking about women that I think of women who are unfortunately hermaphrodite or in some way and have penises or those kind of extended clitorises or a bit of both or those kind of
what
like...
What he's talking about. You know what he's talking about.
My first thought is that he must mean that. Then I realise he means trans men.
No, he means trans
women. Sorry, trans women.
And he doesn't mean trans women, he means... women. So it means women whose birth certificate were born and the parents foisted
the male gender on them because they had willies and but they're actually women and he means them.
He means them. Yes.
And Rishi doesn't mean it, doesn't it? We've worn this one dry, as it were, shaken it. The last few drops of this one have been tinkled onto the compost heap from a standing position.
Okay, fine.
Okay, other things. What other things did you have in mind?
I had a retired Aussies shed light on the magic of pottering about.
Go on.
So retired men with time on their hands are gathering together in massive sheds to potter about. So something about pottering. I mean, not necessarily, also linked to that story, but I'm always looking for subjects that you've never covered before that I think you would do quite well on.
Yes, I don't know if there's much of a peg. It's also men have retired. It's men in their 70s. The intro be in Australia, men in their 70s go to these special sheds to just find themselves something to do. But I don't need to have organised pottering. I've got serious stuff to do, like
you know, picking the Brazil nuts out of the muesli, brushing the cats.
Is that
reorganising the dishwasher because my stupid Shakespeare wife can't load it properly.
Bless you. I know you were trying to keep that sneeze below the volume of the thing. Is that your natural sneeze?
No.
Or is it only because you're recording? Would you normally do a louder sneeze? Well, I bring it up because that circles back to a story which I thought I might write about.
Oh, yeah?
And a loud male sneeze is... So...
Well, yeah. Over the age of 35, men just shout when they sneeze. And it's really... My dad's... What were your dad's sneezes?
My dad went... like that. And if people didn't look up, you'd just do it again. But mine is quite loud. And look, and the point...
You do that. That's the sound of your sneeze.
No, but you go... right? And God, that made my eyes water. You go... And I'm just thinking, fucking hell, your ears are going to blow off. You know, with your postpartum whittling setup is going to go completely haywire. I would poo if I did that. Like everything, your armpits would blow inside out. It's a, you have to let the fucking sneeze out. And your desire to keep it in as if it was something grotesque. You hold it in as if you were about to blow a shit on the table.
Right.
But you go... and And I think it's unhealthy. But, and I bring it up because in a column by Carol Midgley, in today's Times 2, and I know I've said many times when you said, you've brought,
but it's in T2.
You've brought up a thing and said, so and so says in his column, and I get annoyed because they say, I can't write a column about a column. But Times Radio has had big traction all morning, Stig and Asma, talking about Carol Midgley's piece that she's written about the return of Room 101. Mm-hmm. So Carol has written Room 101 Returns Tonight, and she's done a list of things that she would put in Room 101, including funny things like the obvious atrocity that is the word cheeky being used repeatedly to describe William and Kate's offspring. Mm-hmm. Cheeky Prince Louis has stolen the show again, pointing, yawning and being typically hilarious, read Ron Report. Where's the sick bag? It's not the Charles Fort. Hilarity bar very low if a five-year-old pointing and yawning. She doesn't like people who say they don't read the news. Mm. She doesn't like the word deliver when used by Tory ministers. She doesn't like loud sneezers. It's a choice. Yours is to make us hear you enjoying your nasal orgasm, you pervert, she says. Everything. She doesn't like blah, blah, blah. She hates artificial grass, this kind of stuff. Now, and they asked me about it on Times Radio, and my point is, man, that's my column every week. So, and I make a whole column out of one thing that we hate, or I do massive listicles about things that I hate. And if I could use as an intro, Carol Midgley wrote a column about Room 101 is back, the show where the celebrities put things they hate. It's all hilarious. I hate this and I hate that. And there they go. Carol Midgley said, these are mine. When asked, I thought, God, I spend my life compiling these things. What about the room next door? What about Room 102, where we put the things that are really nice?
Oh, that's a nice idea, darling.
And I could write a column about the things that I do like, because I realised when I read Carol's list that every fucking week for 25 years I have told you the things that I hate, but I haven't told you the things that I like.
Oh, what would be in there?
Oh, my wife's smile in the morning.
No, it would be Sam's little nose.
Yes, exactly. Little Sam's little nose. It would be watching a local under-10s cricket match in the late summer evening with a pint. Seeing my son being nice to another boy, something like that. It would be when a very old person crossing the road in front of you on a zebra crossing with a Zimmer frame stops and turns and puts their hand up to thank you, even though it makes them quite unstable, and then carries on to the other side of the road.
When the cats are drinking out of the tap and their ears are going back and they're like and really enjoying it.
Or, the first raspberry off my bush in the garden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it like there's not?
That sounds like a euphemism, but yes.
It does. I love rummaging in a rummaging in a big bush for the raspberry. And suddenly it actually is a euphemism.
Yes, exactly. It really is. No, that's a lovely, lovely
Shall
idea.
Shall I do a lovely, lovely column? What about a perfect journey through an airport when you arrive and you never stop walking?
Yeah, that's
when you
good.
Get through and you check in and then there's security mood and you come out and they call your flight and you go to the thing and you get a coffee and then you walk to the gate and you get through and the queue has already gone out and you walk straight onto the plane.
Yes, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. There are loads and loads and loads of them, but they've got to be kind of niche. It can't be the smell of freshly cut grass, and it can't be...
Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with?
You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with me, Giles Corran.
And me, Esther Walker.
To find out what I wrote about in the end, pick up a copy of the paper or treat yourselves to a digital subscription.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.